and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast. This is your host, Lauren, and I have another Twitter space recording for you from October 5th, 2022. Stephen, Clint, Tom, and myself are all here with our special guest from Visor Finance, Litan Yahav, the CEO. We all talk about success mindsets. It's another really great one. About 500 people tuned in, so we're really excited about that, and we hope you guys enjoy it.
Yep, here we are. It is October. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Wealth Wednesday. It's just after 9 o'clock Eastern. I apologize for our late start here. Had some technical difficulties there, but we are ready to hit the ground running. I am joined, as I am every Wealth Wednesday, with Clint Murphy, Stephen Wealthy, and Tom the Frugal Gay. We also have Litan from Visor here as well that will be chiming in on our topic tonight, which is wealth building mindset. We are going to go for about 90 minutes or so, give or take. We're going to kind of share some of our mindsets that have helped with some of our success up here. We're going to take questions. We're going to take stories, all of those types of things. From a housekeeping perspective, if you do request a speaker in the microphone, please mute yourself until we address you. And then after you are done speaking, please mute yourself again. That's just a little kind of housekeeping item. Also, this is being recorded. It'll be posted on the Adulting is Easy podcast feed in a couple of days. If you were here last week or you weren't here last week and you were hoping for that recording, I have to apologize. It did not come through. So we RIP the space from last week. That's the first time that's happened. So that's our housekeeping stuff. Tom, do you want to kick us off with an intro?
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. My name's Tom. I am 40 years old and I am from Dallas, Texas. I am here to, because I love the topic and I love the three other co-hosts up here. And if I could not have shifted my mindset, I would still be working a 9-to-5 and still handing people popcorn. So these three co-hosts up here really helped me shift that mindset and hit that goal and believe in myself. So this is a topic that I am excited to share with you guys about and excited to learn from. Thank you for letting me speak.
Absolutely. And I think the last time we did Wealth or Success Mindset, I think that's the most downloaded recording that we have too. Clint, you want to go next? Can you go next? Have you been attacked?
Yeah, you bet. And I'm going to be doing a workout while we do this, because at the end of the day, this will tie to mindset. We'll explain it as we go throughout the show. So I am a CFO by day, for those who don't know me. And at night, I am a podcast host of The Pursuit of Learning. I write books, fiction and nonfiction. And I also write a lot on Twitter, apparently. And then also, like many of the people up here, I am a pretty avid real estate investor, and that also is my CFO day job. Father of two, been together with my wife for 27 years, and this is by far my favorite topic. Over to you, Lauren.
Love it, Clint. I love how you've doubled down on real estate. You're like, it's my day job. It's my passion. It's how I love to invest. All of the above. We'll certainly talk about real estate tonight, I'm sure. Stephen, you want to do an intro?
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Thanks for having me on. I'm Stephen. I'm the co-founder of Cashflow University. It's a place where we teach people how to build their cash flow and investing strategies. A few of the panelists up here tonight are actually teachers in Cashflow University. And I'm excited to be here tonight to learn more about building a wealthier mindset. And thank you for having me here tonight, Lauren.
Absolutely. All right, Litan, you're up. Do you want to give us an intro? You're new to Wealth Wednesday, so this is exciting.
Guys, I'm so excited to be here. Like, all you guys are like idols for me in terms of like financial management and content. So I'm super excited to be part of this Twitter space. A little background. So I'm also an 82 guy. I'm 40 years old. I have three kids. I was born in the States, but I actually live far, far away in Israel. Background. So I was in the Navy for 6 years. And then after that, went to school and founded a startup back in 2011, 2012, which was successfully acquired back in 2015. That's where, like, when I made my first money, made some money, didn't make tens of millions, but made enough. And at that point, started to invest. I love real estate. But found that for me, I love more investing in people than actual real estate. So I only invest as a limited partner in real estate syndications, which is a whole industry that I love because it generates a lot of passive income with zero involvement. So that's sort of like my psychological approach. And over the past 7 years since the exit, sort of been managing my money on my own. And over time, it I had some good problems to have, but some problems sort of tracking everything. Just crazy spreadsheets and multiple bank accounts and cash coming in, going out. And at some point it was enough for me and my co-founder, and we decided to build ourselves a piece of software to track everything and manage our own finances and automate as much as possible. While doing so, a bunch of friends wanted it as well. And we said, well, why don't we just build another startup out of that? And so that's what we did. And so that's Visor and we're working on now. So that's a quick background about me. I'm super excited to be here and love talking about wealth as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I had Litan on my podcast recently, and so that's kind of how we've gotten to know each other over time. So Clint, I know this is your most passionate topic. Do you want to kick us off for tonight talking about success mindset?
Yeah, what I love to do, and what we've done on past ones, and maybe even if, you know, you might not remember what you said on past ones, and it doesn't really matter because we always have a new audience in here. But if we start with you, Lauren, and we say, what are, to you, the two most important mindset traits that you have developed over time that have allowed you, at the age you are, to be a multimillionaire real estate investor and to be in the position in life you're in? What are those two mindset traits, and how can people on this call adopt them?
Yeah, that's a great question. The number one thing is switching from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset. For me, I used to think of money and wealth and just kind of life in general, that if someone, say, got a promotion, that meant that I couldn't. That if someone bought a property, that meant that I couldn't buy a property. That if somebody made money, that meant I couldn't make money. And that's just not the case for a lot of different reasons. But that's just not how the economy works, right? We can all be making money. We can all get wealthy and things like that. Another mindset shift that I had relatively recently, I was thinking about this. We were on my dad's boat recently, and we're driving by. My parents have like a decent house, but it's like a one-story ranch on the water. So you go out of the canal, and then you're going down this just beautiful open water in the Tampa Bay area here where I'm from, and multi-million dollar houses, just gorgeous. And they're knocking down houses like my parents' house to build these things. And I had this thought where I thought, instead of thinking like I used to when I was younger, I want one of those houses. I thought, I don't know if I want to do what I would need to do to get one of those houses. I don't know if I want to put in the time and the work and the effort that would be necessary to buy one of those houses. I've worked really hard to use real estate, and I'll do this as my intro since I didn't introduce myself, to use real estate to get these 8 short-term rentals and 4 long-term rentals, build a pretty good, pretty good retirement account and things like that. My husband's worked hard to become an owner of an engineering firm. We've done all of those things so that we can be financially independent and work optional at 30 and 33 years old, right? I don't know that I want one of those big houses to kind of wipe that out and to then be, again, having to work for money and things like that. If it comes, right? If the Adulting is Easy podcast goes to the moon, or if my husband has a huge exit from this engineering firm or something like that, okay. But I had changed my mindset to not, I want that house, but to, I don't want to do what it takes to get that house. Is that helpful, Clint? Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And what would you describe that as? Would you describe that as a mindset of contentment with what you have?
It's almost like a moving away from like coveting something, right? Like just wanting something, but not being willing, to do anything for it. It's just this idea of, yeah, absolutely being content. Maybe there's a bit of delayed gratification in there too. That's a muscle that I actually try to make a conscious effort to exercise, because I don't know if other people have felt this in their lives, but something that I've always sort of noticed is, I'm always like, well, maybe when I get this next house, or when I make $100,000, or when I get this next, when I get a brand new car, or when I get a boat or a camper or whatever it is, you always think that that is going to bring you more happiness probably than it does. Right. And so I actually exercise delayed gratification a lot of ways, too. So part of me is like, I could get that house. I could do what I need to do, work till 65, keep the sales job forever, maybe try to become a VP of sales, things like that. I could do that, get that house, and then still maybe be at the same level of happiness that I am at right now, but having lost a lot of time. Right. So, yeah, definitely there's some contentment and I think some delayed gratification as well.
It's interesting what you're talking about there. I heard a story this weekend when I was interviewing someone on the podcast, and there was a wealthy business person who made a fortune selling grapes. And at some point he decided he was going to sort of put everything to the side and just travel the world. And that's now how he's sort of known, is for that side of things. And there was a competitor who was doing really well, and they came to him one day and said, "Hey, you know, your competitor is getting so rich. Like, are you jealous?" And his reply was, "I will always be richer than him because I have what I need. He still wants more." And so I think you're starting to find happiness in what you need or what you have, which makes you infinitely wealthy because you don't need more money to pursue something else. So I definitely love that. That's beautiful. Now for those two mindsets, and we can come back to this, Lauren, if you want, and we can work through the group and then come back. For people who don't have an abundant mindset, or they're still craving, they still have desire, they're not content, how do they find those two mindsets?
I think you should channel that. I think it can be a very helpless feeling when you want something. For example, let's think about like diets. I have noticed, let's say in the past, if I've needed to lose some weight, I can eat a pizza and feel really bad about myself, right? Because I know that I'm not doing anything to work towards my goal. The following day, I can eat really well, work out, decide I'm going to, you know, be a healthier lifestyle, maybe go on a diet for a little while and lose some weight. I am the same weight as I was the day before. I'm the same level of health, but I suddenly feel a lot better because at least I am taking those steps in that right direction. And I think that that anything with wealth can be that way too. It can feel pretty demoralizing, you know, to not having started. I think that idea of channel anything, if you are having the scarcity mindset, if you're discontent with where you are, if you channel that into things that you are passionate about and things that can also generate wealth, if you can find that. It's a little bit, Clint, we talk about books a lot, but if you think about Good to Great, and there's this idea of this hedgehog concept, you've probably read that book, Clint, but it's this idea of the hedgehog finds the intersection of things that they can be like the best in the world at, that they can be very passionate about, but also can generate money. And that kind of intersection is where your hedgehog concept is. And I think if you can kind of channel some of these feelings into a little bit of hustle and into a little bit of direction, you can, I think, really change mindsets. And just to finish up the hedgehog thing, the idea is there's this fox, right? And this is from the book Good to Great. This fox can try a bunch of different things. He's very sly. He's very agile. He can do a bunch of different things to try to get to this hedgehog. And the hedgehog does one thing, and it's curl up in a ball, and that fox can never, ever get to that hedgehog. So that's the idea. That's why it's called the hedgehog concept in that book. But it's basically where kind of passion, something that you're really good at, and something that makes money all come together. And I think if you are not working on those things, there's going to be a natural discontentment feeling inside of you.
So if we find our purpose, if we find our passion, as the Japanese like to refer it to, it is the ikigai, where our purpose or our passion, what we're good at, what we love, what we can get paid for, and what the world needs, the intersection of all of those, when we find that, then we'll be living life from a place of contentment and happiness. It's easier to find the mindset if you put yourself in the right environment.
I think definitely. Absolutely. And just as a side note, everybody, there is a little chat bubble in the bottom right of this space. If you have questions or comments, you can send DMs to me, certainly, or Steven or Clint or Tom, but you can also go there and just kind of post little messages under this space, and we'll either answer those out loud or reply there as well. That's one thing I forgot to mention at the top. Sorry about that, Clint.
Oh, no worries. Thank you, Lauren. And now what we're going to do, Steven, you're not allowed to copy Lauren. What are your two mindset recommendations for people?
Oh my God, you totally put me on the spot. What are my two mindset recommendations? I think for me, the thing that has helped me the most, so I deal a lot with volatile markets, stocks, and crypto. What has helped me the most is staying calm and consistent and trying to stay level-headed. So I'm dealing with volatile markets. That doesn't mean that I have to be emotionally or mentally volatile as well, if that makes any sense. So I want to be the consistent one. I want to be the stable one. I don't want to be volatile. I want to stay level. And that helps me deal with the volatile markets that I trade with almost every day. If I can wake up, get into a flow state, stay stable, stay consistent and level through the day, that helps me to trade or interact with the market. So, for example, you all know that I mine crypto, or I guess I did. And now has been a very challenging time for GPU miners in the cryptocurrency field because it's very unprofitable to mine. So I have to stay level-headed through that, look each day at what is profitable, or if it's not profitable, turn off the mining rigs and not let it get to me. I have a significant investment in mining rigs, and I need to just stay level and just say, hey, you know what? There's going to be a time in the future when cryptocurrency mining will be profitable again. And what are some things that I can do to stay level and stay consistent through this trying time for crypto miners? With equity markets, this is a very difficult bear market that we're going through. So what are ways in which we can find opportunity and stay well capitalized and make some income while we're trying to get through and make it and last to the next bull market? So for me, I know you asked for two, Clint, but that's paramount for me, is staying consistent and level through volatile markets.
And so, Steve, you raise a good point. You say, and we can almost call it two because there's subtle differences and we can get into them. You wake up in the morning and the goal is to get into a flow state. And then throughout the day, throughout the week, the month, the year, the life, the goal is to remain level-headed. So let's break those two down. What is your technique, strategy, hacks, if you will, to get into flow? And then we'll dive into the same thing for how you remain level-headed in the face of chaos and uncertainty.
Okay, so one thing that I've shared before in previous spaces is the first 2 hours of the day for me are actually quite hard. I wake up almost always in a very bad mood, and it takes me quite a bit of time to get in and get ready to trade and to invest and do my day job. So I actually have to make quite a bit of effort to try and get there. So I meditate, I make sure I have a good breakfast, and if time permits, I'll exercise. So those are my things that I do to try and get there. And I have to actively in my mind try and get into that flow state. So meditation does help quite a bit for that. I try and quiet my mind, quiet my body, quiet my spirit, and visualize my goals when I visualize them, I try and animate them. If I can see my goal and then I can animate it just a little bit, I know this sounds hokey pokey, but if I can animate it, what it does to me is it helps me to build desire for it, because it's like, what does it look like to be with your family and they're all happy? What does it look like to get into that car and close the door? What does it look like to pull up to the red light, stop, wait for the green light, and then push the pedal right through the floor and the car takes off? Like, what does that feel like? What does that look like? What does it feel like to have a successful business? And what does it look like when you log in and you see the payments coming in? What does it look like when you get that stock that trades through and lands exactly the way that you want it to? What does it look like? Because when you can see it and you can animate it, it helps you to feel it. And when I can feel it, then it helps me to get desire, and that helps me to get level and into it and just say, hey, you know what? Today might be a bad day, but it's a day that I need to get through because of what I saw in the morning when I woke up and I meditated it and I visualized it and I saw and I felt what it's going to look like. So I know it sounds hokey pokey, but that really helps me to get into the zone of, this is why I'm going through today's success or failure, is to get to that day that I want so bad.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds hokey at all. I think it's, you know, you're using the law of attraction, and to the extent that you're using the law of attraction, and I always put that big caveat, you're combining the law of attraction with the law of action, then I think you end up in the right spot. Because part of what it does, Steve, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, when you visualize that, when you see where you're going and where you want to get to, does it start to, and then you meditate and you release your mind and you lower the activity, does it start to fill up a little with, here's how I can do what I visualized? Here's an idea I have that will contribute to where I want to go.
Yeah, okay, yeah, definitely. So what do you mean by lower the activity?
So when you, you know, what I mean by that is, so when I wrote a post yesterday about mindfulness, I talked about the fact that it can increase creativity. And the reason I say it increases creativity is if you think about your mind and how chaotic the thoughts are often, just going in multiple directions and you're grasping onto all of those thoughts. And when we meditate, we don't necessarily eliminate thought. That's impossible. But we stop grasping the thoughts and we just let them flow. And we leave space for our creative ideas to then pop up so that we can grab a hold of them. But if we're stuck in that chaos of the repeated messages that are always going through our mind, we don't have that space to find the messages that lead to the creativity, that lead to the good ideas that will move us forward in life. That's what I mean by taming the mind, is letting it be calm and peaceful. The thoughts are still coming, but we're not grasping on to each and every one of them. We're only grabbing a hold of what we want to. And that's where I tend to find the creativity or the good ideas that lead to profit.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So most of the time, especially the big goals that we have in life, you know, I want to retire by the time I'm 40, or I want to retire by the time I'm 35, or I want to have a brokerage account with $1 million in there. We don't at the time, we can see it and we can feel it and we can get motivated for it, but we don't know how we're going to get there. I love what you just said there. By meditating it and clearing our thoughts and lowering the task, we will see opportunity as it comes throughout the day and the weeks and months. And because we felt what it's going to be like to own and have that goal, we'll have the courage and sometimes the gumption to make that leap of faith to go after and chase after that activity. But most of the time, the biggest goals that you have in life, at least in my experience, I might know the first two steps, but it's going to take 10 to get there. and or oftentimes more. But as we go through one step, it leads to the next, and we find opportunity, we find what the next one's going to be, and we surprise ourselves, and we accomplish the goal. So I love that, Clint. Definitely agree with you. Back to you, Laura.
Well done, buddy.
Yeah, I think it's time. Oh, go ahead.
Tom time.
I am here. Clint, did you want to ask something or do you just want me to go?
Yeah, so we have abundance and from coveting to contentment from Lauren. Steve has being level-headed and getting into a flow state. What are your two? And then we'll dive into them.
I'm going to go ahead and learning from others and building a circle that you get motivated by. This was shared in another space this week, but your circle matters so much. And I learn from my circle constantly. And if I didn't have a circle, I would still be where Lauren is with that scarcity mindset and handing someone popcorn tonight. What is today? Wednesday? Actually, it'd be my day off. So I'd be handing someone popcorn tomorrow night if I didn't surround myself with the right people and learn from them and constantly learn from them. The other thing that is a shift for me is you control your attitude. You wake up with this attitude. You have complete control over it. If you can't understand that and, you know, once you own that, you own your attitude and understanding that you're in control of your attitude and you dictate where you go with it is when I made that shift and I took ownership of my attitude, I saw different results. And even though that they were slower results, it was still results that I celebrated along the way.
Can I ask a question, Tom? What was your attitude before and what is your attitude now?
I still struggle with a scarcity mindset. So Lauren took mine, but my attitude was, I'm going to do this till I die. I also had when I was resigning from my job, my boss said to me, I don't know where you're going to go with that attitude. And it was a attitude of, I don't want to be here. And it was, I had basically worked myself through the system. I was tired of playing the game. I was tired of pretending that I care. And that was on me. And my attitude got real bad towards the end because I was just ready. I was checked out. I was tired of going into a company that would replace me in a week. And I knew that. And I was just playing along to get to the next property. And I stayed, and all of you guys up here know this, I stayed for the extra 2 years, and I should have just, my numbers were right in 2019, my notice was in 2019, and then I had self-doubt and I hung out for 2 more years. So when he came to me and he said, I don't know where you're gonna go with that attitude. And then 3 weeks ago, when the article came out and it was posted on LinkedIn and he liked it, I'm like, that's right, that's where I'm going. I know that you couldn't see it because, again, he's a leader and he's completely checked into the business and this is his job. But I had a vision all along. I just had a bad attitude, especially when I lost sight of where I was going.
And have you always, Tom, had the concept of building a circle and surrounding yourself with people that push you, challenge you, and help you grow? Or is that something you've been developing as you got older?
Definitely developing as I got older. When Tiffany shared it, Tiffany is in our CFU group, and she shared it in a spaces. And I'm like, I've been doing this. I just haven't been saying that. And I have been doing it all along, and I have heard that before, where you want to surround yourself with people that are in the spot that you want to get to, so you're not hanging with a bunch of people that are going to hold you back. And that's one of my favorite tweets that I tweet, is when I stopped listening to friends and family that said I'm wasting time buying ugly houses, is when I started to excel. And I can tell you, it's wild right now. As articles drop on different news publications and I post things, and I have bullies from high school who relentlessly mocked me, who are friend requesting me on Facebook now. So when you stop listening to all the chatter in the background, even family chatter, because I will tell you, there are times where I'm on the phone with someone in my family and they are like, you are buying ugly houses, still to this day. That's when I started to kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel and see what I was doing was where I wanted to go. I just couldn't see it clearly all the way. I needed those glasses on to see where I was going.
Tom, I love that. And that's something that we have been, I mean, have we been doing these spaces for a year now? And I think it's just, it's evident that I, like, we learn and grow from each other every week. And the people that join these spaces and ask us questions and share their stories, I learn something every single week. Litan, it's your turn. Can you tell us a little bit more about Visor? Because that's the company you work for now. I know you said that you had a successful exit as an entrepreneur already. But can you tell us a little bit about Visor and then maybe jump into kind of the two biggest things, maybe the biggest mindset shifts that you've had that have contributed to your success as a CEO?
Yeah, well, this is amazing. I love all the things you guys are talking about. Mindset is so important. And Tom, sort of like the phrase is, you're only as good as the company you keep. Like that resonates so much with me. I've joined so many groups and masterminds and pay a lot of money just to be around people that are more successful than me and smarter than me. And I think, Lauren, we talked about this on the podcast about the beer test, and just like people that you really can relate to is so important. So I wanted to get that out of the way. That really resonates with me. I don't want to dive too much into Visor. What we're building at Visor is to help people that are in wealth creation mode, just to be more on top of it and have that one source of truth. Once their investments become more complex than the more mass market around us, and because once you try to generate wealth, real wealth, you want to make sure that you have that solution that's smarter than you are, and don't trust yourself just building the best Excel sheets. That's what I did, and it became a mess. So that's Visor. Diving in, I mean, does that make sense, Lauren? Am I on point? You want to focus me?
No, you're focused. You're good.
All right, cool.
So can I ask, so what does the solution do exactly, the Visor solution or product? It manages my wealth, or it gives me advanced solutions on
spreadsheets? Right. My mindset is all around passive income and cash flow. And I think that sort of resonates with a lot of sort of the FinTweet conversation in general. But for me, once you start to generate massive streams of passive income, like 5-10 different streams and more, and you want to keep it passive, for me, it just became a lot of work. And I want to do things that I'm passionate about doing, which is building companies and tech. And so one of the things that happens in Visor, so like it will, once you add in your investments, you can either throw in your spreadsheet or throw in any rental agreements or investment docs. Then the platform translate them into assets or liabilities, and then you'll link in your bank accounts to the platform, and it'll automatically track cash flow coming in and out and link that cash flow to specific investments, updating performance automatically and letting you know if things are on track, below or above. And then once you have all these projections for all your different holdings, it sort of helps project cash flow moving forward, because I'm in wealth creation mode still. I want to make sure that my cash is deployed. But on the other hand, sort of, I don't want to be cash poor. And I want to make sure that when things are coming up, I want to be aware that they're about to come up or supposed to come up, such as, I don't know, balloon payments on loans, capital calls coming up or large expenses. And then sort of see, all right, can I invest in this property or this investment? How will that affect my cash flow moving forward? Can I go do a trip now? And that will cost me a bunch of money. How will that affect my cash flow? Same goes for buying large expenses, cars, or stuff like that. So those are some aspects of it. But the another aspect is sort of, we're trying to build a community, sort of showing you what people like you are investing in, and enabling you to sort of communicate with people like you anonymously, but based on your actual investments. Especially in the private markets, this is pretty problematic. There's zero transparency. So when you look at, I don't know, private equity, real estate funds, syndications, VCs, stuff like that, no one knows who the good ones are or the bad ones are. A lot of scammers out there. And if you can communicate with people that have invested in things like this based on their actual investment performance, not just on a Facebook group, then it can bring a ton of value. That's the way we see it. Does that make sense, Stephen?
Yeah, no, for sure it does. I'd love to see like a screenshot or kind of a sample of what it looks like. That might be kind of fun to see. I don't know if you have, a tweet you could put into the nest? It might be interesting to see it.
Yeah, we can put something in the chat here. I'm also happy to sort of hop on a Zoom call sometime with anyone who wants and just like walk them through it and get feedback. That'd be great as well.
Cool. And your DMs are open?
Yep.
Cool.
All right. So that's about Visor. Now, you guys took all the good stuff about mindset. I also really, so for me, there's another aspect about surrounding yourself with people that, for me at least, that are more successful than me and smarter than me. Sometimes it can turn out to two outcomes. One of them is a very competitive outcome, which isn't healthy for me at least. And the other one is a motivational outcome, sort of to be more like that and to put things in place to sort of perfect my goals to reach something bigger. And sort of many times when my mind goes into the competitive aspect, it can be sort of like, I'm not gonna say depressing, but it can be very hard to deal with that, because I mean, it's like something you'll never achieve. And I found myself many times, so I practiced mindfulness, I think through the Sam Harris app. I don't remember the name of it. That sort of got me on to mindfulness training, and that's helped me a lot, sort of zone myself in and not compare myself to others in the bad sense, and more zone in on the more motivational aspects of it. And I've also went, like I said, and I've joined a bunch of groups that really help each other succeed. I don't know if you guys heard of GoBundance, but it's one of those groups. It's all around that type of stuff and people that are in the same mindset. And that's helped me a lot. But like being around people that will pull you forward. That was sort of, Tom, sorry, I took yours and I dove into that as well. But if I have to choose something else, it's something that's around failure and fear around failing. I think many people, me including, sort of like when you think about fear, it stops you from creating, from doing things. And as long as sort of I always remind myself that the fear of failing is legitimate, it's fine, but it's also okay to fail. It's just not okay to fail and then do the same mistake again, sort of fail and then learn what made you fail and then not make the same mistake again. So the more you fail, the more you learn how to do things better. And so that fear basically is something that when I'm afraid of failing, that means, all right, I'm about to fail and it's okay. And that sort of helps mitigate the fear. So that's my two cents on that.
No, I love that. And I was very like that as a kid. Like I would not take certain classes or maybe I always kind of played rec sports versus playing club or AAU, because I think I was kind of afraid of failure and coming up against something where I could not succeed. And that's something that I've really worked on over the years. And luckily I have no problem being in a room with people like Clint who have, you know, 150,000 Twitter followers when I have like not that much. So, you know, and it's gotten to the point where I think that's a great way to say it, Litan, where we don't necessarily, it's not a competition. Again, this goes back to the abundance mindset I was talking about. It's not a competition. It could be motivational. And I love how you said it that way. I was wondering as you were talking though, do you think mindset is something that where you like, you have this breakthrough, this aha moment, and then you have the right mindset? Or is it something that needs to be worked?
So I think it can be both, but for me, sort of, I had these aha moments around, it's sort of around fear, but around sort of like being out of my comfort zone and trying to push myself outside of my comfort zone. And I think this sort of started in the military, sort of like you've been in situations where you don't want to deal with it because it's really hard. It's really dangerous. It puts you out of your comfort zone. And then once you do it, you're like, wow, this is amazing. I want to put myself in more situations where I'm out of my comfort zone, because that's where I improve and learn so much more. And since then, sort of even like managing a company and speaking with like my employees and sub-managers and stuff like that, it's like you see the same situations happening where people do not want to deal with situations because they're out of their comfort zone, and you try to push them to be there. And then once they overcome it, it makes them so much stronger and better. Yeah, it can be totally taught and practiced as long as you sort of try to put yourself out there.
Yep, absolutely. What do you think, Clint?
So I think the more you expose yourself to people who have the right mindset, and the more you're willing to be intellectually curious, the more you can cultivate the right mindset. And if there's one mindset that I think we all need to have to be successful, and I know everyone on the panel has it, and I was chatting with FI Squirrel in a chat, and it comes up for me, is that at the end of the day, you have to have radical responsibility for your fucking life. Like, at the end of the day, no matter what we have been through, and every one of us has been through different things. I'm always a bit challenged to say that when we're in these spaces, because like people will look at me and say, hey, well, you're a cis heterosexual wealthy white guy. What the F do you know about trauma? But you don't know anyone else's story. The one thing that will differentiate people who have been through trauma and succeeded, or have been through trauma and are still in a trapped frame of mind, is ownership of their life. You get trapped in this idea that life happened to you instead of life is happening for you. And something shitty can happen when we're kids. Like, I got hit by a car when I was 4 years old. I was unconscious. It was my first of like double digit concussions. Like, I probably shouldn't even, you know, be here or be speaking coherently. But somewhere along the way, I learned to take responsibility for my life and not let that one of many traumas sidetrack me or determine that I would be less than. And like most people on the panel, we're probably at a point where we've all wildly exceeded any expectations we, our family, our classmates had of us. Like, I probably did that a decade ago, and I still know I'm only touching the iceberg of what I will achieve in my life, like the tip of the iceberg, because like all of you, I surround myself with people like you. The people in my circle in real life, despite what you four know about me, like, I'm the poorest earner in that group, I think. So you, when you're always doing that and you're owning it and you're saying, how can I get better? You will get better. You just have to own it, want it, and then do it. Is that a good answer, Lauren?
Yeah, as always, Clint, great answer. I was just going to say that I read it, I think it's in the book, again, I'm back to the book, but The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, but it talks about where you, just because something's not your fault, doesn't mean it's not your responsibility, right? And
yes.
Yeah, that was huge for me, and when I realized that was in April 2016, I was sandwiched on the Howard Franklin Bridge down here in Tampa, and my life changed in that moment. I'm not horrifically injured or anything like that, but it was a very long process of, you know, I will need surgery, and I still deal with some of the effects today, and it was a very long process of physical therapy, and I focused very hard at first on the physical things, learning to work out in different ways, trying yoga, right? I couldn't do bench presses, you know, I couldn't do like leg presses and things. There were things that I used to do to work out that I couldn't do anymore, so I gained weight, and then I got bummed out, and then I drank red wine, and I still do that a little bit, right? But I took care of some of the physical things that happened to me, but I didn't take care of the mental aspect. Ended up about a year and a half after that getting diagnosed with depression, and going through kind of that whole thing. And what happened throughout that time, I, for a long time, blamed the girl that hit me. Why me? Why didn't I leave the office 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later? Why this? Why that? And it didn't matter. And I think it was around, you know, I read that in that book, and just, you know, through some mindset help and probably all the therapy I did and things like that, I finally came around to, it wasn't my fault. But it was my responsibility. I was the one that had to live in this body for the rest of my life. It was my responsibility to take care of it, you know, both physically and mentally. So that was just something I was thinking about as you were talking, Clint.
It's 100% accurate. And the, you know, I talk about this a fair bit, especially with people in a relationship. There's a lot of guys listening, and often, you know, when you go through a relationship breakdown, or you break up with your girlfriend, or you're getting divorced, and again, Squirrel and a few of us were talking about this the other day. A lot of times guys want to blame their partner. And at the end of the day, if I look back 6 years ago, we were in a rough space in our relationship, and I probably put all the blame on my wife. And at the end of the day, it's on you. Like, you're the only one who can fix you. You're the only one who can fix your relationship. And if you're willing to do the work, you're willing to own your piece of the situation and be the best partner you can be. If the other person rises to the occasion, you're going to have a great relationship. But putting the blame on them and then not asking yourself, what am I doing wrong? How am I a bad partner? How am I not living up to my partner's expectations of a partner? What can I do to improve? Can I cook breakfast on Sunday morning to give my partner a break? That one was for Squirrel because he makes a great breakfast for his family on Sunday mornings. But what can you do to own your piece of your relationship, your career, your finances, your wealth? The tool that we're talking about as an example earlier, Visor, is only going to work if you actually have assets to stick in there and things to track. You can't just buy a tool and then say, I'm going to get independently wealthy. You have to do the work, and then the tool can supplement that work. So what ownership are you taking in your life? That, and you summed it up. If you had not taken that last step of saying, well, wait a second, I am responsible for my body and the rest of my life, you wouldn't be here talking to us today. And it's beautiful that you are. Super thankful for it, that you took that step.
Go ahead, Leifan.
There are two great books. One of them is Extreme Leadership. Clint, have you heard about that book about from the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, that's Jocko, right? Jocko, David Goggins, and James Clear. Those three books, I think the world of them and think most people probably should read them. And at the same time, they're largely how I've lived my 44 years. So I haven't read any of the three. Makes sense.
Right. And there's also another book, Fred Kaufman's book called The Meaning Revolution. It's around leadership and how important it is to have meaning when you lead. But I just remember one small example that sort of resonated with that. It's like, imagine like people are late to meetings and they say they're late because of the traffic, whereas they're not late because of the traffic. They're late because they didn't assess correctly when they should have left to reach the meeting on time. And that's why they're not taking responsibility. And when that sets in, it's like you really understand how many times you don't really take responsibility in things, right? You blame others or the situation. So it's so important what you're saying.
And Sean, I think we've mentioned your name quite a few times. If you want to pop up here, if you can. Tiffany, would love to hear from you as well, if you're open to that. And also anybody there in the audience, if you have questions, if you want to share a mindset shift that you have had or things like that. I loved the comment that we got. If you look in the bottom right where that little bubble is, we got a really great comment tonight and so far. So just remember to keep asking questions, speakers, request a speaker, the mic, I should say, send DMs, things like that. All right. We got Sean and Tiffany. It worked. How's it going, Sean?
Wonderful. Thanks for coaxing me up on stage. I got nothing groundbreaking to add. I don't know. I missed the first. I'm always doing bedtime when you guys start, so I missed the first 20 minutes or so. But I don't know if someone's mentioned this before. But as far as the mindset goes, I find my biggest pet peeve I see in others most often, I try and catch myself, but I notice it in others more, is just that self-talk, whether it be positive or negative. I work with a lot of wonderful women in my office, and I find females in general are so hard on themselves, and it just kills me when I know their abilities and I know their value, and they don't want to apply for higher positions, or they don't want to take a chance and put their name out there for things when they really should be. But they're their own biggest critic. And I think they really handicap their ability by constantly talking down to their value and their abilities. And I think everyone could take a note from that, that you just, it's kind of like that manifesting attitude of, I like to say fake it till you become it, not fake it till you make it, but just no one who's done anything has known from the beginning exactly how to do it. No one's 100% confident all the time. So I like to look at things as I'm going to do the best of what I think I can and learn from who I can, but really sell it to myself with confidence. And I'm going to grow into that person that I'm believing myself to be right now. And it's really served me well over time. So I try to encourage all those ladies at work, guys at work, everyone that I kind of mentor, that you really need to sell yourself first before you can sell anyone else. I'll drop Tom's favorite quote. How in the hell are you going to love someone else? Or how in the hell are you going to love someone else if you don't love yourself? How does that go, Tom? You got to correct me in this. What's the RuPaulism here?
It's how in the hell are you going to love yourself if you are? No, now you got me messed up. It's how in the hell are you going to love someone else if you can't love yourself? Or you're close enough, Sean. I think you probably got it better.
Thank you. Thank you. But, yes. I just had to drop some RuPaul knowledge and everybody. But yeah, like you got to believe in yourself. You got to don't discount what your abilities are, because the more you say those things to yourself, the more you're subconsciously going to believe them. So you got to really believe in yourself. And much like manifesting wealth, you have to just have that abundance mindset of I'm worthy of this. I can do this. I'm this person. And just lead with your mental, I don't even know how to put it, your mental value before your actions are going to follow that.
That's very well said, Sean. That was worth coming up just for that. And nobody had said that yet. So that was awesome. Tiffany, going to go to you 1 second. Tom, I did see your hand. Unless you were going to do the RuPaul quote without Sean prompting you, you might have a question.
I was just going to share a little tiny story, and it'll segue right into Tiffany because she was in on this conversation. But we had a friend today who had a tweet that started to go viral, and he sent us a group text, and he's like, I deleted my tweet. I can't do it. And basically, Tiffany and I and one other person are like, dude, that's all part of it. That's part of growing. That's part of the tweet. There was nothing offensive, but whenever you have it, and Tiffany said this just a minute ago, so she can expand on this, but long story short, when you have a tweet that hits or you go to a group that is not familiar with you, you're going to get those trolls. You're going to get those haters. And a couple weeks ago, I had one and I muted it and I moved on and I didn't scroll back to that tweet. And that's where I left it. And it's an uncomfortable place, but you have to have, you know, confidence in what you're doing and deliver it and know that there's going to be haters and doubters and shade that comes along the way. And I just thought of that because I actually said, I'm like, what was the tweet? And then when I realized what it was, I had commented and retweeted on it without even thinking anything of it. But it was already deleted, so I couldn't go back and look at it. But it was like that moment of, oh my gosh, I might make it. So I'm going to delete it just in case, because I don't want to do that. And I've had that doubt so many times along the way, because I used to, if I had that type of interaction before, which I had on this tweet a couple of weeks ago, I would have deleted it and tried to go hide in the corner and do better. But it wasn't one of those that needed it. So I'll segue over to Tiffany, who was in on that conversation, and she just shared her wisdom with us in that group chat, but I hope she can share it here with us as well tonight.
Hey, thank you. Yes, thank you so much for having me. I had to sit down and like just now jot down my thoughts before I lost them all. But I just wanted to piggyback on FI Squirrel first. And one thing that I do in order to kind of reset my mind a lot of times is use affirmations. So there's certain affirmations that I use every day. And I just tell myself them every single day. And then I also have like, I use an app called I Am, and it cycles through different affirmations. So like, for instance, today, and I'm just being transparent, I laid my grandma to rest and she was like my mom. And so I was telling myself affirmations because in that moment, you know, it's a very emotional moment. It's a very sad moment, but I'm like, I am okay. I am going to be fine. I am fine. You know, it's not the end of my world, you know? And so when you start reprogramming your mind, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, it actually works. Like, believe it or not, it actually works. You can take yourself from a negative autopilot to a positive autopilot. And so after I told myself affirmations and, you know, was just kind of meditating to myself while I was in the presence of everybody else, it helped me get through that moment. And so I just wanted to share that with people. Affirmations really do work. And I highly suggest even just starting with one, at least, you know, wake up in the morning and say, I am grateful for a new day. And you'll notice that when you do that, your whole day looks completely different. You put yourself, you force yourself into positive autopilot. If you wake up grateful, then all of a sudden everything looks completely different. Like, instead of waking up like, oh, I got to get out of bed, I got to go to work, I got to do this, you know, that's kind of putting yourself into negative autopilot. And then you'll start seeing the negative the whole day. So I just wanted to share that. And then also going back to Tom, yes, you know, anytime you're in front of people that you don't know, that don't know you, there's always room for people to judge you or to say negative things or whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, stay authentic to you. And, you know, the people that are there for you are going to be there for you, period. So there's no need to, you know, bend over. At the end of the day, there's always going to be somebody that needs to say something, okay? There's always going to be somebody, okay? And usually what happens is that somebody starts something and then it trickles down to everybody else. I had a reel on Facebook go viral, and it was literally just my windshield cracking because the stupidest things go viral. But there were so many negative comments about my windshield cracking. And I'm just like, really? Like, y'all don't have a life for real. But all I did was, and this is what I shared in the group, I just ignored the comments. I did not go back to the comments. It had a lot of comments. I was just like, hey, whatever, keep commenting because this is helping my algorithms. So, I mean, at the end of the day, people are always going to have an opinion of you. But stay authentic to yourself and don't allow that to deter you in any way. Another story that I can tell you, for instance, when I was quitting corporate America in 2019, people were like, well, where are you going? And I'm like, well, I'm going home. You know, I'm going to work on my business. And they're like, but Tiffany, like, you're a single parent. You're a single mom. You have a house payment. You have all these things. What are you going to do? And so a lot of times you'll also find that people project their fears onto you. And if you're confident in who you are, and like, for instance, in that case, I was confident in my finances. I was confident in knowing that I had a budget and I knew I had a plan. None of that talk bothered me. So I just wanted to put that out there as well. Ignore the haters. Be authentic to yourself and don't allow other people to, project onto you, because it happens a lot. So I know I said a lot, but I have a lot to say. So hopefully that helps.
I'm so glad you've been joining these, Tiffany. I love hearing from you every week. I am so sorry about your grandma. I'm glad you were able to lean on that app. I think you said it's called I Am, and that was an app for affirmations. And that's incredible. A couple of things you said. I love this idea of taking your brain kind of from negative autopilot to positive autopilot. And that goes back to a little bit of what Tom was saying earlier about how you control your attitude and your emotions, and you are controlling your reactions to things more than you ever think that you are. And then people projecting their fears onto you, I definitely think that's how that can definitely happen. Go ahead, Tiffany.
Yeah, sorry. I thought about one more thing. And that is, you know, when you are out in the world, just in general, it's going to be like, kind of like, I think, I can't remember who said it. I think it was Clint. when you think about, oh my gosh, life is happening to me, right? Like, oh, I stubbed my toe today and it hurts so bad. And then after you stub your toe, then everything else kind of crumbles around you. And when stuff like that happens, just reframe it in a way like, at least I have my toe. Like, I had a lot of people laughing at me because I had COVID. Well, not laughing at me. I had COVID back in July. And I'm always the type of person to find the positive. And so I was like, well, you know, even though I feel horrible, luckily, my entire life I had asthma. And asthma has trained me for this moment to have COVID, because all of my asthma things that I would do, I did that while I was sick with COVID. And so I was able to find the silver lining there, right? And so that's what I challenge everybody to do at least once a day. Just find the silver lining in something that you feel is horrible going on in your life, whether it's stubbing your toe or being late to work or missing your bus or whatever you do. Try to find the silver lining in that. Well, maybe if I had left a little earlier, I may have not made it to work. You know, you never know. So just try to find the silver lining in whatever it is you're going through.
What an amazing, intangible example there. That's awesome. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
It's going good, guys. Really enjoying the space. Tiffany, I love the words of affirmation thing. For anybody who's familiar with love languages, you can use the love languages to really determine what's a great way to improve your own mindset. So I'm a big words of affirmation person. Like, that's what really lights me up. So that's what I do for myself. If you're gifts, then you can incorporate that. If you're quality time, then perhaps a meditation or a workout in the morning. Whatever you would really love for someone to give you, give that to yourself. In terms of mindset, I had a massive shift about 10 years ago as a completely broke real estate agent. And this guy's a little controversial, but it changed my life. That was Grant Cardone's 10X rule. I basically took that concept and applied it to giving versus making. And I said, okay, what if I could give 10 times more this year than I gave last year? What would that look like? And that completely shifted how I think about money, how I think about what I can do with money. And it really gave me a deeper meaning to the money itself versus just trying to hustle my way to it. Anyways, so thought there, and really appreciate the conversation, Warren. Awesome as always.
Thank you for sharing that, Jake. And yeah, I mean, Grant Cardone's a little bit controversial, but when you flip it on its head like that, not about making, but giving, I think any issues anybody has with Grant Cardone go out the window. And that's fascinating. So just question, Jake, what if you, let's just say hypothetically, what if your love language is acts of service?
That's a good question. I think I would try to be intentional and think about what are two things this month that I would really enjoy doing? Like, I'm going to buy that one-on-one boxing class because I really would enjoy spending that time with somebody. Like spend some money on someone else serving you. I'm going to go get a pedicure. I'm going to go get, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just go buy the act of service.
Yeah, that's cool.
Somebody pouring into you, just pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. I bought one of those enchanted picnics recently that I'm going to do soon. So that's kind of like that. Go ahead, Tiffany.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar, but I like that idea too. But I was going to say, ask for help. You know, a lot of times we try to suffer in silence, honestly. And you'll be surprised how many people are out here willing to do stuff for you. And all you have to do is put it out there and ask for the help. So I would say, as far as acts of service, if you need something done, open your mouth and maybe somebody will do it for you. I know for me, it's hard. It used to be hard for me to ask for help because I was just so independent. I'm like, I really don't need anybody to do anything and blah, 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 blah. But I've learned if I just like stop suffering in silence and actually ask or put it out there, like I'm notorious for doing like an ask Facebook thing. People are actually willing to help. And if my love language was acts of service, I feel like that would be an easy, you know, win, especially if you have a significant other or whatever. A lot of times, you know, you just don't feel like asking them, but sometimes they might, you know, you think that they can read your mind and they really can't. And really all you have to do is just ask. So that would be my two cents on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely. And I've something about the love languages too thing, Jake, is I try to recognize in even like friends and coworkers and stuff what their love language is, not in like a creepy way, but in like a, if I have a friend who after dinner sends me a very long text message and says, "Think it was so awesome having you. Thank you so much." You know, I'm like, okay, this is a words of affirmation person. So I try to make sure that my texts to them are always very appreciative, right? And they're always very long and things like that, right? Not being as blunt as I normally am. If there's somebody that works with my husband, gets everybody like gifts all the time. Like, here's your 1-year anniversary plaque thing, you know, or here's, like, do you guys want some shirts or some hats? And I was like, what is with this dude and stuff? And I'm like, oh, he must be gifts, right? So now I try to encourage my husband to get him stuff for his anniversary and stuff like that, right? So that's interesting, Jake. I haven't really thought about even applying my love language to myself, but I do try to recognize it in others and use it in contexts other than just, you know, in a romantic relationship. Clint or Stephen, Tom, anything to add or say? Any comments on our guests, what our guests have said?
Thanks for listening to this episode of Wealth Wednesday. It was another great one. We covered success mindset. Tom talked a lot about hanging out with the right people, surrounding yourself by the right people, changing your mindset, realizing you're in control of your attitude. Clint talked about life is happening for you, not to you. You need to fix your thinking. He also is a big fan of cognitive behavioral therapy. Stephen talked about having consistency and being level-headed in the face of volatility. Litan, our special guest from Visor, he talked about surrounding yourself with people that are more successful than you, even smarter than you. And you, that can be competitive or motivational, and you should try to make sure that that is motivational. And there's a kind of a difference between fear of failure and actually failing. And so don't have that fear, and failure is okay. It's going to stop you from creating and doing things. And just don't fail and then make the same mistake again. I talked about having an abundance mindset and delayed gratification. We had other guests come up. Sean talked about negative self-talk. Tiffany talked about this app for affirmations. And Jake came on. This was really cool. He talked about using love languages for yourself, which I thought was really interesting. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we will see you next week for Wealth Wednesday live on Twitter Spaces.